Welcome to episode 130 of the Marvel Studios News Podcast. My name is Sean Gerber. In a moment, I will be joined by Paul Herman, as well as special guest Andrew Custer, who is a member of our Patreon community, who is joining us to do a commentary track for Venom. Andrew actually selected Venom, not ironically. He genuinely enjoys the film, but Andrew selected Venom for a commentary track, which is one of the things we offer in one of the tiers we have on our Patreon, which also includes other opportunities to be on our show, as we had with episode 129 last week with Brian Crew, as we did our viewing order for the Fox X-Men films. We also offer all kinds of exclusive content on our Marvel Studios News Patreon. We have Patreon credit scenes where we discuss additional topics on top of some of the main episodes we do, like we did last week for episode 129. There's not a Patreon credit scene for episode 130, but you can bet there will be for our next episode after this one. And we also have multiple Q&A shows every week. We do a Daily Bugle, which is a Monday through Friday news show that I host. And we have other exclusive episodes like the Marvel Unlimited Book Club that we do every month. And all of the exclusive content that we have, when you sign up for any of those tiers, you get your own private RSS feed that you can put into a podcatcher like Apple Podcasts and subscribe via RSS so that you can get all of your Marvel Studios news content, the main show, and the Patreon exclusives. They're all in one place. You don't have to track them down in multiple feeds. So for more information on all of the exclusives that we offer, as well as opportunities to be on this show, please visit patreon.com/Marvel Studios News. One quick production note here before we get started. If it seems like some of the things we're talking about in this episode or during this commentary are a few weeks old, that's because they are. This episode was actually recorded a few weeks ago, so that's why we're not necessarily throwing in topics that are up to the day this episode is being released. So with all of that said, let's go ahead and watch Venom. Hello, everyone. Once again, Sean Gerber still here for this Venom commentary. Let me welcome in my usual co-host, Paul Herman.
Hi, it's Venom. I'm excited. I haven't seen this
Venom,
since
the Venom, movie. Venom.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, let's go ahead and let's invite in our guest. The reason that we are here today, so the person I can blame for myself having to watch Venom again, or thank, maybe if this changes my opinion of the movie, Andrew Custer, welcome to Marvel Studios News.
Hey, Sean. Good to finally talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. So we are all queued up here on our 4K discs. We're watching via disc, not digital, but shouldn't really matter if you're watching at home. But anyway, we are all at the very beginning of the movie, black screen, all zeros on the clock, and we are going to get started. You can press play at the end of the countdown. 3, 2, 1, go. And we're off and running with a Sony logo.
Yep.
Definitely Sony.
Definitely Sony.
Well, and just to preface why I requested this, I'm not a troll. I legitimately do love this movie.
I know you do.
Yeah,
I know.
Just for the listeners out there, I know you guys do, but yeah. Just in case people are like, oh, why are they doing a commentary on this of all movies?
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, I've said it all along. I mean, there are plenty of, there really aren't plenty, but there are a few comic book movies that I'm not a big fan of, but I'm never going to take it away from anybody else if they like something. Now we're about to get this Marvel logo, which I believe... I'm going to have to go back. I'm pretty sure this is the debut of the In Association With, at least at that font size and above the Marvel logo.
Yeah, I think you're right. I kind of took me by surprise a little bit too, because yeah.
I mean, it was in
the X-Men films.
Yeah, it was in the trailers, but I feel like this is something that just has to happen because of the whole idea of sharing Spider-Man and the fact that there is... to try and have any little thing they can to provide some distinction between what's MCU and what's not. Because I think it's easier to get confused for audiences that this is MCU because Spider-Man's in the MCU and it's pretty common knowledge that Venom is a Spider-Man character.
Yeah.
Yep, it's probably the best they could have done to kind of signal to mainstream audience. We all already knew, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this reminding anyone of Predator?
Yep.
A little bit of Predator. It also reminded me of the movie that people tried to come up with the wild fan theories for, that it was actually going to be a Venom prequel, which was Sony's Life that came the year before this.
For some reason, I thought this was the alien ship the symbiote was on. Or how does that lady say it? Symbiote? like I refuse to call it symbiote.
Yeah, it's symbiote, but she calls it symbiote.
Well, I think they fixed it because in one of the trailers she was full on like symbiote, which was just way off.
Yeah, symbiote. That
and then it got better.
Way off.
Yeah, they went back. Okay. They went back in and probably ADR'd it.
Good call.
See,
I stand by.
Yeah, well, all of this stuff I'm into, like this kind of these shots and everything, just feels like very classic, you know, very classic creepy sci-fi, you know, and a little bit of yeah. horror vibe to it and tone. Like this stuff yep. I'm into. Nothing's going wrong yet.
Yeah, the smoke, the plants, the darkness. I even love the ambulance scene coming up. But yeah, this whole thing is just really great, creepy sci-fi, exactly as you said.
Yeah,
there it is.
Well. You know, I have to say, I still stand by the idea that this this movie is very much a canon and a trauma movie combined, where you have like the seriousness of canon that, you know, threw money at things, but just wasn't the greatest product, and trauma also the fact that like they just are unabashedly ridiculous, and I feel like it literally pushes those two worlds together, and I think like I don't know. It worked for me in the theater, and I'm curious if, you know, I'm watching it on mute now, so I'm not getting the full effect, but like you said, Sean, like I like the idea that they do take this stuff seriously, and it doesn't look bad. Like there's no bad production values in this, you know, like there's not like, it doesn't feel cheap. Like sometimes, and I'm trying to think of what Marvel film I'm even thinking of, but like even the first X-Men movie, like, you know, granted it was like 20 years ago, it came out or whatever, but like it was like not the greatest production values. You know what I mean? Like they definitely like skimped and scraped for their budget on that one. This one doesn't feel that way to me, at least in my opinion.
I mean, I think you can feel that this is not an Avengers budget or even a mid-tier Marvel budget. But still, I mean, that's not production value isn't where this movie falls down for me. And it's also not even the. It's not even the silly stuff, because that's actually what I appreciate most about this movie is the more B-movie horror trauma-esque type of thing. That's what works best for me in this movie. It's actually and we'll see it as we go on, but it's some of the attempts at drama that just fall flat because clearly there's not as much energy being put into that. But like I said back in our spoiler review, I believe Tom Hardy is in the right movie and just about everybody else isn't.
Yeah. I forgot that they hadn't had the title card till like after the symbiote came.
Yeah, I actually love that. She just starts walking away in that misty background. That's really cool. And then I love this sequence because I'm, well, not San Francisco native. I'm about 20 minutes south, but this all makes sense. This whole like intro sequence when he gets into reporting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say this outright. Michelle Williams is just... she's a great actress, but man, she is just not, she's not in this movie, man. Like you can tell she's just kind of like, I need to get in. I want to get out. And I don't know.
Well, you got to give her something to do. I don't hang this on her. What were you going to say, Andrew?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I actually respectfully disagree. I think she and Tom Hardy, and I'll get into reasons why, their relationship actually makes a heck of a lot of sense to me in the movie and as it progresses. I'm not saying this is like, you know, Leo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet or anything, but, you know, or any sort of famous like that. That line where he says that's hot to her as she's getting dressed for work. Like, that's just good stuff. To me, so yeah
I think my only issue with it is that, and this is where, you know, some of the issues with the movie is that it almost feels outdated in some ways, which sometimes that can be okay because it can feel classic, but just the way this thing handles kind of the one note love interest situation, which like, because it almost like had to be there, especially in like go back to early 2000s superhero movies, where if you're not actually going to do anything new or interesting with it, although I guess a Venom on Venom kiss counts as new. like it's outside of that, it just felt like something where I just wish they had done more with it and done something a little bit different.
Sure. And I agree with that, but I actually like that this is almost a throwback to those early to mid 2000 films where you can just do like a one-off and not have it be tied to something greater. And that's no knock on the MCU. That's just saying like, it's great to just come into this cold. And I actually love his reporting here, the whole San Mateo landfill. He's right on about that. The overflow onto Oakland. Mm. That was big stuff up in this area.
Oh, wow.
So that makes it pretty relevant.
I love the Sons of Anarchy guy just making it, you know, his appearance as like a super like nice, like, hey, I'm just a regular guy just hanging out with my suit and tie. It's like, you're not, that's not you. That's not you.
Well, neither is
he actually makes it work.
Yeah, but but neither is the Mayan because he's an actor.
Well, true. Yeah. And then we have, isn't this Bubs from The Wire too?
Yeah, Ron Cephas Jones. Also known quite famously more recently for This Is Us.
Oh, I don't watch that show, so I have no idea. But I just know him as Bubs, missing a tooth. Oh man, now it was right here is when they're insinuating his like Daily Bugle fall, correct? If I'm not mistaken, yeah. So,
or at least his fall before. Well, isn't in the comics he was a writer initially? He wasn't a
He was a writer.
He was a writer, but it was for a different publication, right? Or was it for the Daily Bugle?
In the cartoon it was the Daily Bugle. In the comics it wasn't, but the Daily Bugle exposed him and he blamed Parker for pictures that or something like that. Again, it's been a long time. And I to be honest, I prefer the cartoon origin as far as Eddie Brock goes. Like I actually like the Spider-Man 3 origin of Eddie Brock. Like for the, you know, maybe not the exact like dialogue they give Topher Grace and like how he hams it up all the time. Even though I kind of like Topher Grace, you know, and the performance his performance and his in you know whatever wasn't the problem. Some of the situations they put him in was the problem. But that being said, I definitely prefer, if I had to pick one of all the origins, I'm going with the original the 90s cartoon animated version, because it just made sense. I loved him working for the Bugle and him and Peter having a history already. And then, you know, building off of that. Are you curious what your history with Venom is? You guys know I got into comic books and into Spider-Man right when Venom was like literally. Mm-hmm. Right when Venom was introduced, and I remember seeing my brother's friend had the comic with Spider-Man and Venom fighting. So I had you know seen two black Spider-Men fighting at the same time. I was like, what is going on? And I just could not fathom what I was seeing. I'm curious what your guys' history with Venom is.
It's similar. Although I think for me, it was just being. I mean, I love the character and read the comic books and, of course, love the 90s version of it. I mean, I remember being so amped for that for those episodes to get, like, Venom on the show. I was never super attached to his origin story. Like, Peter Parker's different. I think that's the best superhero origin story of all time. Venom is just like, okay, fine. Whatever gets him to be Venom, I'm cool with. And I did like that there was something that had the idea of the symbiote and Eddie Brock, you know, going after thriving on their mutual hatred of Spider-Man. Like, I loved that. That aspect of it was cool, but I accepted going into this, like, well, Peter Parker's not part of this world, at least not as far as we know, and at least not as far as we're seeing at this point. So I accepted that ahead of time. So I don't really place any fault on this movie for the changes to the origin. It's just the overall quality of the film as it's, you know, based on its own story that it's trying to tell.
Yeah, so for me, I actually got into Spider-Man with the Todd McFarlane relaunch. It was the Torment five story arc, or five issue arc. So I kind of went back and did the Venom research, and I like the comics. I'm good with them tying it into Peter Parker, but I'm also good with Eddie Brock and Venom kind of just coming in out of nowhere into Peter's life too, and how he had to contend with that and pretty much trap him on an island.
Yeah. I love that too. The island, the David Michelinie stuff. It's a shame because David Michelinie gets no credit for. It seems like with Venom character and even Spider-Man in general. I think he's a very underrated writer, and it's just sad because if you think of like you know you have the Batman writers like you know Danny O'Neill and all those you know legends who've worked on him over the years. And Spider-Man doesn't have the same kind of accolades as the writers go, besides obviously Stan Lee, you know, introducing like all of these you know different characters and Ditko and Romita, obviously. But when you get down to Spider-Man, there's two important writers after Stan left, and or I'd say three. Conway, but his run was kind of short-lived, and he kind of went on with the Spectacular and Web of, I believe, later on. But what the important writers, in my opinion, one of them that no one talks about, Conway people talk about because he's the one that killed off Gwen Stacy, is David Michelinie. He's the guy who created Venom, but not just Venom, but like he created Carnage. Obviously he co-created him with the artist, but it's amazing that this guy like put in so much work with Marvel and laid so much groundwork, but doesn't get like the credit of, oh, this guy's an architect and a great writer, because it didn't like blow away people's minds and didn't revolutionize the character necessarily, if that makes any sense. David Michelinie, his Venom run is really good. If people haven't read it, I know he read it for some of the, Marvel book club here or there, but it's definitely worth going back and reading. It's really, really good.
Absolutely. So I did want to mention, since we've got Riz Ahmed on screen, mm-hmm. I actually like his character too. I know that's a often criticized part of the movie, but he plays scumbag Silicon Valley pretty good, actually, because I actually like almost how he almost seems alien in how he talks to people. He thinks he's above them, and people always make that comment about Mark Zuckerberg that, oh, he's an alien. So I kind of like how Riz Ahmed played off of that. Again, I'm not saying this is an Academy Award winning performance, but I did like him in this movie, and I thought he was a good intellectual villain for Eddie here. Like this part, he just takes away his life because he's asking too many questions. It's great. Well, I mean, not great for Eddie, but I actually like that.
Yeah. Well, while Paul was talking about comics, we missed the great cameo by Dr. Receptionist Jenny Slate, who's got a PhD in microbiology and Google Calendar to help out Drake.
Well, it's not a cameo. She comes back.
I know.
Yeah.
But this is that's the kind of stuff that happens in this movie that just bugs me. It seems like small things, but it really does go into screenwriting and the idea of giving characters things to say. And when you're giving people lines just for the sake of making sure they have a number of lines as opposed to anything that actually gives you anything you should know about their character, that kind of stuff just bugs me because it's easily fixed.
You know, we're probably going to say this throughout the movie. And again, you agree with Sean, it sounds like too, but Tom Hardy he puts the work in, and he really, I love his performance in this movie. I really do. Like just watching it on mute, like he is such a great actor, and I love seeing him just work. He's just a phenomenal, he puts his heart into it, and it just works. And I remember reading that reason he did this movie is probably, well, one is he got paid a lot of money probably to do it, but two, he did it for his son. He has a 12-year-old son or something like that around that age. And he is a huge Venom fan. And I think that's really cool. Like, honestly, this is going to sound funny, but it reminds me of when when Viggo Mortensen took the role as Aragorn. Because he'd have to, he had to uproot his whole life to move to New Zealand for like 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it was. But his son was a giant Lord of the Rings fan. And the reason he did it is because his son like kind of said, yeah, dad, you got to do it. I love Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. And he was really excited. So I just like it. I like it when, there's, even though they personally may not have a connection with the character themselves, there is a connection, the reason why they're doing it in the first place. Now, by the way, these symbiotes right here, is this kind of insinuating of the other ones, like Scream, the yellow symbiote, I believe, Andrew?
Yeah.
I would actually think this is their way of putting it in there, even though I think one of them gets dead because of its merging with a not compatible host.
But nothing's really dead though. It's comic books, man. We
true.
Know this.
Well, yeah. I mean, this movie, I let's just put it this way: if there is going to be a sequel, I don't think we're going to contend with Scream.
Yeah, I hope we do. I would be down. But go ahead,
I'm sure. Well, no, I mean, we're supposed to get a sequel. There's one that's dated for less than a year and a half from now. We just haven't heard anything about it.
Oh, okay. See, I'm waiting for an official press release. I know it's dated, but I'm waiting for the actual confirmation before I get my hopes up. But I can't wait for that. I mean, if that does happen, just with who they got as Carnage, that would be great to see those two go toe to toe.
Well, and I think what's exciting about it to me is that I think at some point in the process, Tom Hardy figured out what this movie was. And That's what I pick up on in this movie is I feel that there is a tug of war happening between Tom Hardy and Ruben Fleischer, who directed this. And it gives me no pleasure to throw Ruben Fleischer under the bus, because that's somebody who were, I mean, granted, I didn't actually hire him for this movie, but I hired him for a lot of comic book movies.
But you were actually pretty excited. Yeah, you were excited.
Exactly. So
was I. So was I.
I was on board with the idea of Ruben Fleischer getting one of these movies, and I was happy when he finally got when he got this one. It really got me excited about it. Yeah. But I feel like his vision of this movie was wrong, and Tom Hardy's vision was correct. And so I just don't expect, once we get official announcements on this sequel, I'd be very, very surprised if Ruben Fleischer was back. But that might actually be, ultimately for the better of this series, because they should get somebody who really likes what Tom Hardy was going for in the, you know, the B-movie horror vibe of this film, and to actually have it be all that in a sequel, I think it would work a lot better.
Yeah, I have to say, we're jumping ahead, but I'm going to say it right now. Why give Woody Harrelson that awful wig? Like, seriously.
I don't expect it to last into the sequel. It kind of got a chuckle out of me when I first saw it, but I was also too excited by seeing Woody Harrelson. So it was kind of like this, oh my gosh, oh, what the heck is that? Oh, but it's Woody Harrelson, so I don't care. So that was my reaction to it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Yeah, it's funny because when we all talked about Venom on the show, we were kind of talking, it was just weird to me because we're the characters of Venom and the Venom, in the comic books, he's just been, to put this all on screen and not give him a villain, but give him someone that looks just like him together. That was a very interesting choice. And I'm very curious with Morbius when that comes out. If that's moderately successful, then are we going to see potentially this kind of are we going to see more Spider-Man films offshoot characters, and what are they going to use for these villains? Because you kind of, if with Sony having control of all the Spider-Man universe, you're going to have to start taking more Spider-Man villains and putting them into the movie. And now I liked, and I know this is kind of Venom commentary here, but just bear with me, because it's kind of, Sony is kind of a part of it. I'm curious with sequels and what I'm getting at is, are we going to have a team? Are we going to have a superhero team of these characters coming together? Now, Spider-Man doesn't have necessarily a big marketable team that you could say, hey, this is what we have. There are, I believe, I need to research this. I'll research this as we watch the movie, but I believe there's a team called the Outsiders. Not Outsiders, but the, what are they called?
The Outriders?
Not the Outriders. I'll look it up here in a minute. It's in Web of Spider-Man, like one of those issues where it's got Will-O-The-Wisp, the Rocket Racer guy, the Prowler, Sandman, multiple characters that are like kind of like heroes, anti-heroes. And you could, and I forgot what their name is, but you could put that make that movie and put some of those characters in there. And I'm wondering, those characters that I mentioned, are they going to put them in their own movie or add them in other films together? Like the character Puma, for instance, like that's a character you could potentially use in a Kraven film that they want to do. Cause Puma and his history, there's lots of different things they could do. And, are they going to be marketable? That's a totally different story. I don't know, but I'm curious if Venom, if they keep making these movies and they keep being successful, who are the villains going to be? And obviously Venom's going to be like the main like protagonist. And, I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here ideas, but yeah, I wonder if these movies keep being successful, are they going to be able to actually make a superhero team like the Avengers, and if that's what their end game is. I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on that.
I actually hope that they don't go that direction. Continue to be sort of, again, no shade to the MCU. I love the MCU, but be the antithesis to that, that's what I hope. But that's just my two cents.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think they have pieces in place to do it, but I don't think for villains it's not a problem, because even if they're going to take Spider-Man villains, so what? I mean, there are so many Spider-Man villains, and there are way more than Marvel Studios is ever going to be able to get to. So if they have to borrow from Spider-Man's rogues gallery to flesh out and provide antagonists, whether they're teaming up these characters or not, even just for the sake of their own individual movies, you know, it's a perfectly valid option for Marvel to go for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love just as we were talking about this, the Sony as a larger picture. I love Eddie and Mrs. Chen. I love their little their repertoire they got going on. I think that's great. And I love how Tom Hardy looks ashamed because he didn't do anything. Not that he could have, but I that feeds into his loser, you know, kind of mentality as he's continuing on here. And I just love that.
Yeah, the only thing I don't buy about this is this is just so this is where this movie, I mean, maybe they should have made it clear that it was set in the early 2000s, because the very idea that this guy, just because he got fired from a mainstream outlet when he actually had solid reporting and information, that he couldn't have just started his own YouTube channel with it and monetized it is ridiculous. Like, that's a movie not being at all aware of the world around it, but
yeah, I would be a very interesting direction to take it. I mean, he's even like circling ads and stuff, so yeah. It almost feels like it's early 2000s or pre monetization of your YouTube videos and whatnot. Like, there you go, Dishwasher Wanted. I guess, or that, or maybe Eddie's like that kid, that guy that won't get out of the 90s or something.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, it's very clear that this is the internet age with smartphones and everything else that everybody's rocking with. So the idea that, you know, some of this is just, it's clunky.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But that's my headcanon in terms of, like reconciling it, that he's just kind of that old school kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And I love this yoga scene. That's it. God, I love this movie. Or I love Tom Hardy, but by extension, love this movie because of him. I mean, this is just so great.
Yeah, he really is the reason this thing is even like remotely watchable. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I like everything about it. Like, things outside of Eddie, I'm not really super stoked about, and I think that's no surprise, but it really is that makes this character and movie so much fun to watch. And without him, this movie would have been a complete failure, to be at least to me. And I think the general audience wouldn't have even there's no chance the movie makes as much money as it does without Tom Hardy, in my opinion. I just don't think the performances, you put any other actor in there, no one's going to at least talk about it. And I don't know. I know that Venom was super successful in overseas. That's one of the reasons why it was so successful. Obviously, was it huge in China? I believe. It was huge in China. So I'm, you know, I got to think that that's, you know, Tom Hardy is the reason why.
Well, I don't think Tom Hardy is what sold this movie to China. It's not like Tom Hardy has a track record of massive success in China. It was the first North American release in China in several weeks. And then also, actually, monster movies tend to do very well in China, and so do superhero movies. And so I think it's that combination of a superhero movie that also kind of doubles as a monster movie that made it work over there. I don't think it was Tom Hardy. I think there's probably a handful of other actors that could have been, and it still makes that money in China.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for China, that's correct. But definitely for any sort of American or English speaking or Western cultured audience, I think Tom Hardy is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely exactly what you said. I think that the monster element really keyed in, and the sci-fi element for the more Eastern audiences.
Yeah.
And I love this scene here where, you know, Riz Ahmed's just like, he's inspiring this guy, but then it's this creepy horror thing. And it's more of that creepy horror vibe that I like. So I'm glad it wasn't just like just the intro. It carries through to the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like the way that thing's coming after him is almost like a gooey face hugger.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I saw this movie at one of those like dine-in dine-in theaters, or, you know, dine-in theaters, or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And it was, the picture was really dark. So I'm amazed at how like colorful this looks compared to like what I watch in it, you know, on 4K at least.
Yeah, I think anytime I saw this movie, it popped for me. So, but I think I saw it like 3 times in IMAX and 2 times in like XD 3D in Cinemark. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And Andrew, on your, you always amaze me when you go see movies, man, because I'll, like, when Venom came out, like, you saw like every day. And I think with Endgame, I'm like, dang, dude, you saw Endgame, like, I think every day of the weekend when it came out. Like, you're an animal when you saw these movies.
Well, some of the movies, I think, Dark Phoenix, I'm probably going to catch that tomorrow morning or something, but just cause.
Oh yeah.
Well, thanks for reminding me. Yeah, I saw your tweet. It's still X-Men. It's still X-Men.
So it is. You're right.
Yeah, I just got to give it that, even though I know what I'm getting myself into. And that actually, and I did want to mention that too, that like with this movie, when I was sitting in the theater, I almost knew what I was getting into. And, you know, I was thinking, oh man, is this where the movie's going to fall apart? Oh man, is this where the movie's going to fall apart? And then like when Venom comes in, I'm like, oh, this is probably where the movie takes a dive. And for me, it was the exact opposite. The movie just kept getting better and better and better. So it's just like, I think my low expectations help, but this movie still holds up for me. I mean, I watched it just a couple weeks ago to kind of prep some of my thoughts on this film too.
Yeah. I think, this is actually the stuff that's not as great for me. There's a few moments here and there with Tom Hardy's performance that I find enjoyable, but there's also quite a bit of this that I feel is just, it's very sluggish, and it goes back into that early 2000s mode of we've got to wait, you know, 45 minutes to an hour to really get the story, going. It goes into, once we actually get to the Venom stuff, I do think the movie picks up a bit. It still has some parts that don't play that well for me. I wish they had done more in the beginning, or just got this going a little bit faster.
You know, that's a great point. I think
I'm sorry. Paul, go ahead.
No, Andrew.
You.
I apologize. I'm just trying to be polite. One of the things that you brought up too, Sean, is that, you know, the problem, I think the main problem with this movie that at least for me, like you said, is that Venom doesn't get here soon enough. And with the problem and watching Godzilla King of the Monsters recently, it's kind of the same issue with me. It's like the stuff that, you know, you're kind of have to wait through. You can't have a 100% CGI fest, unfortunately. And you honestly, you know, you have to go through that, you know, to get to the good stuff. But Venom, I think for me, I wish I could have it sooner, like you said. Like, let's get Venom in a suit sooner. And Andrew, something you were talking about, I was going to ask you, but you kind of already, you know, said it, was you kind of expected not to like this movie. And,
I expected it to be, like, ridiculous, turn your brain off, get as much fun out of it as you can. And I got a lot more out of it than that.
Yeah, and so it's funny. What happened for you is what happened for me for Fantastic Four, Josh Trank's movie.
Oof, I can't go there with you.
I know. But my point is, like, but that's the thing. I walked in, like, expecting, like, the complete dog you know what, and it was actually, I actually enjoyed it a lot more. So it's really cool how people connect to art. You know, again, this is art, commercial art, but, you know, bear with me.
Still art.
Yeah, still art. Connect to art differently, and that you, and this is why I always tell people, you know, it's good to have people you trust and like you love hearing their opinions, but don't take people's opinions as verbatim, and you've got to see things on your own to make your own opinion. You know, unless the movie just does not interest you at all, don't see it. But if like you're like,
nobody's got enough time or money to see everything on their own, so like it's okay to look at a consensus and figure out whether or not you want to give something a shot. But obviously when we're talking about a more narrow scope in this space, like everybody who listens to this podcast has a pretty strong interest in superhero movies. So in those cases, yeah, you probably shouldn't. In a case such as this, maybe it is worth checking it out on your own. But as far as the, you know, not getting to Venom sooner or even in a movie like Godzilla King of the Monsters, which as we're recording this, I still haven't seen yet, but I don't it's not like I'm asking for action all the time, or that I'm asking for the superhero or the CG stuff to be on the screen the entire time. I most certainly am not. I think it's just, you know, the trick is, and I think the best ones have done it, whether it's, you know, go back to the first Iron Man movie or several of the Marvel movies since then, or a movie like Batman Begins, because Batman doesn't show up for an hour, but you're just as invested in that story of Bruce Wayne and everything that's happening in that first hour of Batman Begins. And I'm nowhere near as invested in this story of Eddie Brock at this point. There are, granted, there are some moments, and I think Tom Hardy is pretty game here and he's giving his all, but there's just not enough story around him. And it's just, it's treading a lot of water. And part of what could have made that stronger is maybe since Tom Hardy's doing everything basically he can do, I mean, it's really more on doing more with the supporting characters in the script. And that helps with pacing when you can take the pressure off your lead a little bit and have other people that are also exciting to watch. But this movie doesn't want to give anybody not named Tom Hardy anything worth doing.
Oh, well, I actually, again, respectfully disagree. We just got through Dan's introduction into the story. Damn, and I adore Dan. I think he's so cool. He's perfect. My gosh.
Not a fan of Dan myself.
Oh, no, Paul.
I'm sorry, Andrew. I'm sorry, man.
It's okay. It's like you said, it's art, right? So it's going to be subjective. But I actually love Dan. I love that whole scene outside the old apartment. Just Eddie being kind of, he's at the bottom of the barrel now, and this is why he makes the decision to actually take the case now or investigate the what's going on at the Life Foundation further, because he's hit the bottom of the barrel. He's almost stalking his ex in a way, you know, or, you know, he's probably sitting there thinking, oh, man, what the hell am I doing? I mean, you saw him over the bridge holding the ring, you know, whether or not he can give or get his fiance back is maybe in his mind or not, I'm not too sure, but I just love how he just does kind of realize the state he's in. So he makes this step. This makes sense to me. This whole part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just confused why he stopped caring about people dying for 6 months. He was worried about it when he got fired, and then he just decided to circle dishwasher ads. And then now he's back onto it. I mean, and I understand people fall off of things, and people, you could say that he went through depression and everything because his fiance left him. And so I can sort of buy some of that, but I think it's the way it comes together. They got to do a little bit more with this.
Sure. I definitely think there could have been, I think there could have been a more efficient storytelling for sure. But, I absolutely feel like Eddie, like I'm in his headspace. I understand that he can fall off and feel he's a loser. And again, it goes back to that shame, that look of shame on his face when he didn't help Mrs. Chen. He's in that spot, and this sort of, and now he's gotten so low, is it reinvigorates him again. So again, could it have been told more efficiently, more snappier and better? Absolutely. But I'm on board with how it is so far.
You know, I forgot what this actress's name is.
Jenny Slate.
Slate.
SNL fame.
Right. I remember her from those VH1 Awesome Week, whatever. Where they're kind of commenting about the week's findings or whatever, or like the I Love the 80s or those things. I remember her from that. And I've never seen, I don't watch SNL, so I have no idea. But back in the day, I used to watch those constantly. And I remember seeing her, and then I saw her in Venom. I'm like, oh, it's that girl from the I Love the 80s shows or whatever it's called. So yeah. It's just kind of weird to see her in this setting.
Yeah, well, I've always been a big fan of Jenny Slate. She was in a movie with Chris Evans a couple years ago called Gifted that McKenna Grace is actually in, who plays one of the young versions of Carol Danvers in Captain Marvel this year. She was great in that. But of course, I mean, I absolutely adore Jenny Slate as Mona Lisa Saperstein in Parks and Recreation.
Mm. Didn't watch that show. So
it's your loss, not mine.
hey, that's okay. But Morgan would watch it every once in a while, and I'd be like, why are you watching this? She goes, I have no idea. So we both aren't fans of the show. I don't know. It's just not our thing. Oh, the red light. You don't have to turn on the red light. Oh, sorry. Oh man. Yeah. See, this reminds me of just like complete ridiculousness. It honestly reminds me, it has an Evil Dead kind of feel to it.
Yep.
You know, yep. Which again, I love, because Spider-Man 2 had that Evil Dead 2 feel to it, and which is obvious because Sam Raimi. But
yeah,
like the whole Dr. Octopus scene like was ridiculous, and it was so over the top. It was amazing, and that kind of it's not.
Oh, the Dr. Octopus origin scene with the glass falling. Yeah. Oh man, yeah.
That is like straight from Evil Dead 2.
I think it's not the glass falling. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, you're talking about the hospital scene where he wakes up, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's got Sam Raimi. Yeah. Old school horror.
Yeah. The cheese ball kitschy. Shot. Yeah. Yep. The cheese ball shot I'm talking about is one where his wife dies with all the glass coming.
Oh yeah.
Oh sure. No, yeah.
Which is again another classic Evil Dead 2 kind of thing.
I'd say the hospital sequence is much better than the accident sequence.
Well, 100%. I legit love that sequence, even though it's straight up ridiculous, and it's good. And I think there are those same elements are in this movie as well. Like, it's straight up ridiculous, but I still find it enjoyable, and it's actually not terrible.
See, but I think that's where it falls in the direction, though, because I feel it's some of it in there's a little bit of in the visual, but mostly it's in Tom Hardy's reaction to things. And not so much in the overall tone of the movie, not so much in how the music is coming in and supporting any of this. And that's where I feel like there's a fight going on here. I really do feel like there's something that Ruben Fleischer is trying to make more of a traditional, straightforward, earnest superhero movie. And Tom Hardy knows exactly what this is. And so that's why I really do hope if we're going to get another one of these. And again, I say this as somebody who was on board with Ruben Fleischer for this for day one and for long before that. I really hope there's a director change, and I think I'd be shocked if there's not, because I can't imagine they got along. It just doesn't even feel like the kind of thing where they would have even gotten along making this movie, because they seem to be have such vastly different opinions of what it needs to be. And I'm team Tom Hardy on that, because he's right about what this movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah, ooh. I would actually say so. I mean, I'm not sure what all the behind the scenes might have been, but I mean, even if Ruben Fleischer comes back, maybe he gets with the program.
Maybe. There was talk that the reshoots happened over the summer, you know, a few months before this movie ultimately hit theaters. And, you know, there was talk that Tom Hardy had kind of taken over the operation by then. But you never know with that stuff. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody who reported on that was wrong, but some of the information you get can be, you know, it can be nothing more than gossip. It's like, even if your sources are people who are making the movie, we all know how office gossip works, and it does work, and it still happens on movie sets and happens on television sets and anywhere else there are human beings working with one another. So it's hard to know for sure what's what, because none of us were there. But sure. What I'm watching on screen does feel like there's I do feel like I'm seeing creative differences happening on the screen.
Well, I'm not going to disagree outright, but I feel like the way that Fleischer even shot it, like the way he was just chowing down on that chicken, the shaky kind of cam. I think Ruben Fleischer might have been on board with some of the more like kitschier elements.
I think he was on board with some of the visual horror, but I don't think he was on board with the almost natural, just kind of let people have a laugh with it tone that Tom Hardy seemed to be completely comfortable with. I mean, you have the story of jumping in the lobster tank. Like, that wasn't in the script, and that wasn't a Ruben Fleischer thing. Tom Hardy just saw it and said, okay, I'm going in. And that's
so that part's amazing, by the way.
Right. And that's what I'm saying, though, is like, that's not even the kind of thing that occurred to Ruben Fleischer, and Tom Hardy's like, yep, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait till we get to that part. I'm actually going to have to mute, cause I'm going to be laughing.
Oh man.
Like laughing loudly to the point where it'll ruin the audio.
I wonder if I know this movie was a huge hit in China, you know, and it was a moderate hit here, but huge hit.
It
in
made
China.
Over two. It's over 200 million domestic. Yeah, solid.
It's pretty solid here in terms of its budget. It's a hit, I would say.
Well, in that case, I would say I wonder if Tater Tots have hit had a slight increase in sales after this movie.
Have Tater Tots ever struggled? They've always been awesome.
I'm not, you know, obviously you're not wrong, but I'm just saying that you wonder if Tots in general just became more popular. Like, there's a slight uptick. because what I'm wondering, because I there's a local restaurant like kind of fast food chain here in Washington called Taco Time, and they have like, and I'm sure they have other places here too, but they have Mexican fries, and they're basically like tots. And I always will tweet at them because I love Taco Time, like literally love it, and I have it every week, and it's delicious. Anyway. And
Taco Time gets a lot of valuable airplay on this podcast.
It's fine. It's fine. No, I mean, like, it's if they want to sponsor us, I'd love it. You know, but anyway, it was just funny because the reason why I bring him up on this movie is because I was tweeting at them about stuff and they brought up Venom. I'm like, Taco Time, are you guys into Venom? Like, is that your thing? They're, oh yeah. I'm like, oh okay, okay, okay. So whoever runs Taco Time social, they're into this. So. I need to tweet at them again about tater tots. So anyway, here's the infamous officer scene. This is the stuff that I loved. I love this. This should have been happening 15, 20 minutes into the movie, in my opinion. This is the stuff I love. Like, this is where your boy here, he's not bad. I actually liked his outfit too, by the way. Your boy's outfit.
Yeah.
What's his name again? The boyfriend?
Dan.
I like his outfit. I want to wear it.
Well, you know, it's a fancy place.
Yeah.
Well,
it's going to wear a suit and tie.
Interesting comment, Paul, about the idea that stuff like this could have happened 20 minutes in. And there is a part of me that thinks that maybe this movie would have benefited from a little bit of a nonlinear approach. You know, that way it could have picked up a little bit more in media res. And then you kind of get backstory as you go along for exactly how this happened to Eddie Brock. And I feel like you could have managed that because you could have had him, you know, toying with his memories and figuring things out because things have been kind of clouded by the symbiote being part of him and everything. But it would have allowed more of this kind of stuff to happen throughout and just probably would have helped the pacing a bit.
Sorry, Sean, I didn't mean to be rude. I had let out a little chuckle. I mean, just the look of pure ecstasy on Tom Hardy's face as he just slips into that lobster tank. I love it. Oh my gosh! Now, and I know I've said this is not an Oscar winning movie, but this is an Oscar winning performance.
No, this is great, man.
This is great. I mean, just.
honestly, that was up to that point. I was kind of bored, It is whatever. Once the symbiote and him like start like connecting and he does that, I'm like, okay, I started like investing into everything. I'm like, okay, I'm getting into this now.
Oh yeah. This movie totally. I mean, like I said, I mean, I can't disagree with Sean about the pace of this film or the efficiency or how things could have come into it a little bit better and faster. But once Venom and Eddie merge, it's just like this film skyrockets for me.
It gets better for me. I wouldn't say skyrocket.
Well, I'm See, saying I like that. Skyrocket. I'm saying skyrocket.
did you guys laugh at this? I think this is hilarious. Like I could I start I was I'm still laughing now at this part. I love this. Like this is where I feel they could have played up the comedic element a little bit even more so.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the balance in the movie now, I think, is perfect. Like this, it's just Dan and Eddie walking down a hospital corridor, and I totally thought he was going to eat this dog right here, like right then and there. I thought
right
he was going to,
No, really. Before it ends, the reason why I interrupt you, Andrew, I apologize.
Oh,
this is supposed to be insinuating Silvermane, apparently. That's what someone said online, and I thought that was interesting because his last name with a dog. I believe the last name of that guy there is like it's not Silvermane, but his real last name is like the last name of that character or whatever. Like, so
yeah, but that kind of stuff can, you know, some stuff that are just Easter eggs. They're not actually set up. You know, like there's a Craven truck that's on the back of, you know, a name, or there's just some regular plain truck with the word Craven written on it on the set of Morbius. So like some of these things are just, they're just there just because. I don't think Craven's going to have any sort of shipping company or any other company.
I agree.
Which actually makes me happy that maybe that movie won't happen because I want Craven in the MCU with Marvel Studios. But anyway, side note.
To be honest, at this point, even though I think it's
I think we can have both.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, Sean,
I'm fine with having both, but specifically Kraven. I don't know that we can have the same character happening in both universes at the same time. So I think we can have an SUMC and an MCU, but I think which characters populate each have to be separate.
Yeah, I would agree there. What I would say that is, Kraven's just not a character that I think is really interesting. I mean, especially if you read the comics as of recently, it feels like, or unless Marvel's planning on changing the character, which might have just answered my own question. Are you guys reading Spider-Man at all? Before I might unleash a giant spoiler, so I don't know if I.
I mean, I'm not currently reading it, but I don't know the status of anybody listening. But.
Yeah, I'm not reading it, but go for it.
Again, it's comics. Who knows? But you guys all know the famous Kraven Last Hunt when he died, you know, back in the '80s, and then they revived him about 10 years ago ish, or less than that maybe. But a while ago, they revived him after Brand New Day. And they just had a pretty solid, fun story called Hunted in Spider-Man, where Kraven traps all the animal characters, Spider-Man characters, and then he hunts them, and he gets like clones and stuff. It's really complicated. But anyway, long story short, his last clone son kills him at the end of the comic series. And because he wants to die. And I won't say how it does, because it's actually really cool how it happens. So I won't spoil that. But the reason why I bring it up, Sean, is because I'm wondering if they're going to revamp the character a little bit for the MCU or Sony, and they wanted to get rid of that old school Kraven and reintroduce. When they introduce a new Kraven, it'll be that modified MCU version.
I'm sure they'll have a costume that, you know, if we're talking about design, I mean, I'm sure they'll do something that looks good but still faithful. I mean, they gave Mysterio a fishbowl, so I'm sure they'll still give Kraven a very comic book kind of look. But
no, right?
I mean, we know that Marvel Studios will do this. I mean, they will add things to characters, subtract things to characters, whatever they have to do to adapt it from screen to have it feel like, you know, an actual person. So I have no doubt that, you know, if Kraven shows up in the MCU, that it would be something great. I'm not as confident that Sony would be able to do it, make that kind of transition as well, because their track record is not the same. But doesn't mean they can't. But there's no way I would even try to make an argument that Sony is as trustworthy with this stuff as Marvel Studios. Nobody has ever been as trustworthy with this stuff as Marvel Studios.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Jenny Slate. This is when the movie really falters, is when these scenes, in my opinion. And I know Riz is not a bad actor, and obviously he's amazing, but he's not terrible in this, but this is just not gripping.
It's underwritten.
Yeah, I would actually say he works for me because he plays that I'm better than you mentality up so well. So he's bringing it. I don't think Jenny Slate is bringing it in the scene, or it's not her fault. It's the writing. So I would say that Jenny Slate is probably my least favorite side character. I feel that she's the one out of everybody. I think Michelle Williams works. I think Riz Ahmed works. The actor who plays Dan, I think he works. I just think Jenny Slate doesn't quite work as well as she could, or her character doesn't work as well as she could. But Riz Ahmed here is being just so creepy and megalomaniacal, and it works for me.
Yeah,
I mean, on his end.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, pretty much all of these supporting characters are kind of a letdown. Dan is kind of fun, but for Michelle Williams, I think that part's underwritten. I think Riz Ahmed's part is underwritten. Jenny Slate's part is underwritten. These are all good actors. Jenny Slate has actually, as I said, she did a great Gifted, was kind of funny and sweet, but still a dramatic movie as well. And she was good in that. I think Jenny Slate's a very good actress. Michelle Williams obviously is a great actress. Riz Ahmed, great actor, but there's just not enough there. And that's why it's always confused me about this movie, is because when they started getting all of this talent, and there was a lot of skepticism from Venom from the very beginning, but then Ruben Fleischer and Tom Hardy were attached to it and we thought, okay. But then we started seeing people like Michelle Williams, especially. There's no way this was Michelle Williams' first opportunity to be part of a comic book movie. So why did she choose this one finally? And so it made me think there must be something really special about the script. And while we could debate whether or not there's anything really special about the script, there doesn't seem to be much that's very special in the script for her. And so it confuses me why she's in there. I mean, Riz Ahmed, Jenny Slate, they're not quite as, they're certainly not as established in, you know, in feature films as Michelle Williams is, who's, you know, multiple time Oscar nominee. But, you know, so I understand them taking a job like this, but still, I wish there was more there for him across the board. I think Tom Hardy's the only one who even has an opportunity to really look like a superstar in this, and everybody else is. You can have balance. You can have somebody be a compelling lead, and also give supporting characters a hell of a lot to do. Just see Black Panther.
Sure. Well, I think Black Panther is such an exceptional film. You know, and this obviously is not, like I'm saying, this isn't some kind of great comic, but this I wouldn't even say this breaks the top 20 for me. But I still enjoy it. But yeah, Black Panther, that was just such a stacked cast from head to toe. It's just yeah. And this cast is too. But yeah, I do agree, Sean, and I will relent a little bit. As much as I do love this film, and I do love most of the side characters, could it have been better? Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's where, and you know, Black Panther is obviously one of the absolute best examples of it. But I think the MCU and even other movies, not just Marvel Studios stuff, has given us better examples of things for supporting cast.
Venom stuff is, again, I wish it would have happened a tad bit sooner.
Sure, absolutely. Because this action sequence, I was actually, I was wondering, because in the trailers it looks so bland, and then when they include all the drones and all the different stuff that Eddie does with the symbiote to get the SUVs off of him, I just think this next action sequence, it's not like one of the greatest action sequences of all time, but it is more clever than I would have initially thought. And again, that just goes to how this film got better and better for me and just kept trumping my low expectations, to be honest. And yeah, I love that.
Did you really think like you were going to like not like it though?
I thought it was going to be honestly maybe somewhere between Fantastic Four and X-Men The Last Stand in terms of my taste. I just thought, okay, this will be a movie I saw and I'll be glad I saw it because it's a comic book movie, and then that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the stuff that I came to see. This is what I came for. Yeah, this stuff,
absolutely. Yeah, I said in the trailers, this motorcycle chase sequence looks so bland. So I when this part happened in the theater, I was kind of clenched up, going, okay, I think this is maybe where the film gets a little bit too much. But I love the use of the drones. This is so cool.
You know, it's one of those things where I'd say few things this movie surprised me in a really, really great way. Is the interaction between Eddie and Venom, like the symbiote. Like I really like, this is the one thing where I think they really hit on that. And I think now a sequel, I'm really excited to see what a sequel could do, because it should get better and this should be the main focus of this next movie. And again, like this seems like fine. I like this stuff, but I'm excited to see the symbiote in action more. And again, getting that in. And so, but that being said, the interaction between those two things was so well done. That to me is what makes this movie work so well, as much as it more right than it should, to be honest. And because of that, I think the sequel could potentially be huge if done correctly. If it, like what Sean said, they find the right person, or even if Fletcher does come back, that the vision that Tom, you know, Tom, I hope Tom has a lot of creative control over this, you know, if and when this happens, because obviously he had the right thing. He had the right mentality. And because of, I think Tom, the movie was a huge hit. And I think Tom should have a big say in what goes on creatively. If it really was his call to kind of take the character in the way it did. And if so, improve on that. So I think this movie has the sequel has a huge potential, not to mention a giant movie star like Woody Harrelson. So, and Tom Hardy. I mean, I think the Venom sequel could be, and this is not a comparison I'm saying as like quality, but maybe as far as like the success rate could be a Batman Begins Dark Knight in a sense to where it'll be like even a bigger hit, not to the level of Dark Knight or quality of Dark Knight, but in that comparison in that way where Batman Begins was kind of a modest hit, Venom was a modest hit.
Oh, then the sequel Venom's kind not of a modest hit. It. Venom made almost twice as much money as Batman Begins. What are you talking about?
Like, I always think of Venom.
Venom is closer to Dark Knight in money than it is. I mean, granted, not domestically, but in terms of its total global box office, Venom is closer to Dark Knight than it is to Batman Begins.
Oh, my bad. Then I always underestimate how much it made.
Yeah, Paul, you have to remember this movie made $855 million.
Yep.
Domestically, I guess that's always
Dark Knight was over a billion after a January re-release. Like,
so then by your calculation, Paul, if Maximum, or if like Venom Maximum Carnage or Venom 2, whatever they want to call it, right? Let's say that pulls at Dark Knight, where in terms of percentage, it goes above that one above Batman Begins. Man, I think the Venom 2 is looking at like a $1.6 billion payday.
Well, I'll say this. I think this Venom sequel could very well break a billion if it enhances what I was referencing, and that's what I mean. Is like I guess I'm using the Batman Begins and Dark Knight references because I feel like there was almost a bigger shift of just everything in that movie, like just I think of quality. Even I mean, I love Batman Begins to death, but the type of quality and the type of just kind of taking that essence that Nolan did in that movie and escalated it into even more, no pun intended, from the movie, but into the Dark Knight, then you could do the same thing with Venom. It's going to have huge ramifications for that film. And I think this is going to be like, because again, the scene right here, if you have more scenes of this and you keep the budget down and you have more scenes like this where you have the symbiote and Venom actually on screen more, I think it's going to be a giant hit because this is the movie. This is what makes the movie right here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So definitely, I think if they can trim the fat, expand on what they on like this part right here that we're watching where Venom takes over and here he is. I mean, this is just amazing. So, yeah, if they can expand on that. And then now you have Woody Harrelson in the mix as Carnage. Yeah, that movie is, I mean, it has the potential to be one of the better comic book movies if they play it right.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think maybe even Sean could get on board with it.
Well, look, I don't see a path for Venom to become, you know, among the elite films in comic book movies based on where we're starting here and what would be, you know, what would be happening next. But it can be a lot better than what this is. And I think it can be a lot better with a more clear understanding. And I think that would just naturally happen. But a better understanding of what this franchise is and what the tone of it is and the tone of this character. I don't care if it's Ruben Fleischer who relents and says, okay, well, you know, Tom was right, I was wrong. If that's what happens, cool. Or if it's somebody else coming in and supporting what Tom Hardy wants to do, because Tom's totally right about how to approach this character and how to approach this material, great. So we can still have something better. But I would also point out that, you know, I don't know that this movie, well, it doesn't have as much of a leap to make because of where it already started at 850 plus million. I mean, domestically, it could do better. That's where there's a better comparison to Batman Begins, because Batman Begins was like 206 domestically and Venom's like 213. So, or 213.
And that's what I mean. Maybe
so there is that. There is that domestically where it's a little more comparable, but Venom, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's a different marketplace. I mean, the international marketplace is so much bigger now than it was in 2005 when Batman Begins came out anyway. So it's fine for Venom to, if Venom can keep making 200 million around there, give or take, domestically, it's going to be fine. I think China is going to be just as interested in Venom 2 as they were in Venom 1. So, and maybe even more so. Maybe this time it tops 300 million in China. So the potential is there. I think for Sony, it's just figuring out what's going to be the best move. I think the best move is to fully 100% lean into where Tom Hardy is trying to go with a lot of his performance in this. I think that's the clear answer, and I hope that would be the case. I mean, if that would be because usually the star wins. So if it's a creative battle between your movie star and your director, you're usually going to pick the movie star, and you absolutely should in this case.
Yeah.
Yep. And then just a shout out real quick to one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. It already passed, but when Venom makes the dive into the bay and emerges, and then and Eddie goes, "Oh God, my legs, they were broken. And now they're not broken." I love that line. I love that line, the way he said it, because yeah, he was jacked up pretty good there. And then that would be the, and I ride a motorcycle. So that would be the first thing that I say if all of a sudden I was like back together. So I just love it. His delivery was perfect. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the studio leans in on what Tom Hardy did and his vision, and then like I said, you add Woody Harrelson into the mix, that has the potential to be something really special.
Yeah.
Maybe not Dark Knight, of course, but something
something
more respectable, I think, where people can go, hey, that was pretty good.
And honestly, if I'm making a prediction, I think that's what's going to happen. I think the movie is going to embrace all those things. And again, it's going to be comparable in essence to Dark Knight, in a sense to where it kind of just elevates the first one even more, which is hard to do in superhero films, you know, because it's very mixed bag with sequels. You know, they're either like great or they're just kind of mediocre. They're either not really terrible. If it's like, it's hard to be great. They're usually just kind of in that mediocre kind of thing. And, you know, a lot of times. And with Venom 2, I feel like there are so many, you know, it's such a weird movie with Venom 1. Venom, the sequel, just has so much potential to embrace all the things that make Venom, the first movie, like, entertaining. So let's do it, you know, at least as far as I'm concerned. And I kind of, yeah. Oh man, there's Sons of Anarchy guy again. I'm in the wrong movie.
Do you not like him in the movie?
No, I just only see him from Sons of Anarchy. I just can't.
Oh, okay.
I just can't. I know he's an actor and he's playing a character. He does a fine job, but yeah. I just want to see like this rip off his shirt. And he's just like got his, you know, his gang, you know, colors on him. Like, come on, you know, I can't unsee it.
Well, this is his day job. This is how he's able to afford all this shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh man, I wonder if Tom Hardy got literally sweaty like he does, like he had worked out before every take to make sure he had that sweaty feel all the time, because he just looks so like just rugged, like just like sweaty nonstop.
He looks like a drug addict almost, and I actually like that look, because I like how it feeds into the whole symbiote, like or the symbiote is like a drug, right? So
yeah.
I actually like that he looks kind of half cracked out throughout the movie now.
Question for you guys. Will Venom get the white spider eventually, or will it always just be black?
The answer to that question is whether or not there's ever any crossover with the MCU, or the SUMC introduces its own version of Spider-Man. At this point, there's not really a story justification for it. The symbiote literally just arrived on Earth. It's had no contact with Peter Parker, and Eddie Brock that we know of hasn't had any contact with Peter Parker. And so based on all of that, it's really hard to see where the spider would come from.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would actually agree. And I would say like, I wasn't missing it in this movie. So if it eventually comes in the form of some sort of crossover or introducing Miles Morales into this or whatever, I'm game. And then if it doesn't, I'm good with the look, because you still have a little bit of white in there, because he's like veiny a little bit. Mm-hmm. So so you still get that color contrast, and then his eyes too. So I thought that really popped.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Oh no, I'm not really missing the white spider symbol as much as I thought I would. You know, like I still, you know, with. Yeah, because there is a little bit of white that pops in kind of here and there, as you say, like kind of the veiny look to it. So they still have the similar contrast. Obviously, it's never going to be the same as quite this massive white spider logo, but it's still – the look of Venom doesn't bother me at all in this.
Okay, so just because I'm a purist and you guys know this about me, I have to. And so for me, I want the White Spider in there, and I don't need Peter Parker to be in it. I almost would like it. It would fit the character of Venom, not of the symbiote himself, after being on Earth for a while, being like, we're a superhero, Eddie. We needed a symbol.
That's fine.
And then he like looks at us, you know, and again, and that's what I'm saying. And he sees a symbol, and then he said, and he goes, we're going to take this as our symbol. And it's, and the White Spider emerges. I would be 100% fine with that.
That's totally fine. I think in this movie, it doesn't make
sense. Totally. Yeah.
No, this movie, it doesn't make sense, but if they wanted, you could do it that simple in, you could definitely do it that simply in a sequel for sure.
And would you think that would work though? Would that work for you guys?
In this movie, in this series, based on this tone, absolutely 100%.
Yep.
Okay.
And
cool.
Because
that's okay. Good.
Yeah, that, and it doesn't even really. I mean, we know it is the White Spider, but you know, if you look at it, I mean, it could be anything. It almost has like the White Spider, the White Venom symbol. Is like almost it almost looks like it's tendrils, right? So it doesn't even look like a spider necessarily, except for just that's what we know it as. That's what we've always known it as. It looks more alien-ish, like all the tendrils coming off of him as he's swinging over the SWAT team there. So that could totally work. What you're proposing there, absolutely.
This is great.
This is a great action sequence.
Yeah.
And I'm about to say something pretty maybe like heresy, but this sequence with the SWAT team and like the way the lighting is very blue kind of reminds me of Terminator 2, the way James Cameron lit the SWAT sequence with Arnold coming in. I mean, it reminds me of it. Again, maybe there's somebody like screaming at the radio now saying, man, this guy's really in love with this movie, but it just got that feel to it. That's what I like.
My biggest problem with this action sequence is it has no reason to exist. Venom got into the building up the side, doesn't need to go down through the lobby and bust up a bunch of SWAT officers. So it's not, you know, and I mean, the action sequence, it's okay. I would disagree that it's a great action sequence. I think it's okay, but it also just does not have a reason to be here.
Fair enough. I mean, I would say it has a reason because Eddie wasn't going to go back down. And Venom calls him on it appropriately using the P word because I know it's a PG-13 podcast, but so it's good enough for me. And I love this scene. Okay, so getting back to Michelle Williams, this scene really works for me. And again, is Tom Hardy doing all the heavy lifting with him apologizing at the behest of Venom, and that Venom pretty much saying he might not get another chance. But Michelle Williams, her eyes are really working well in this scene. And I just love, I'm not going to say this is like Academy Award winning cinema. Again, I keep using that phrase, but just so I'm not overselling this, but, I just really like the scene between Annie and Eddie. I just feel that this is where their relationship works, in tandem with how this movie is presented.
Yeah, the Michelle Williams just does not.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I will freely say that if people aren't seeing what I'm seeing, I'm certainly not going to hold that against you. Believe me. I mean, I understand if this movie is just, or if certain elements like Michelle Williams are just not, if you're not on board with it, I can totally see where you're coming from. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for me, this really works. Like just him saying he's sorry and that look where she said, "Yep," she just said, "Eddie." I just like it. I don't know. It works for me.
No, and that's the thing is like I think that there's elements. Again, you made up a great point too, Andrew. Tom's doing all the heavy lifting. I mean, she's just kind of going off of him, and he's the one driving this whole scene. The only reason why you're not like just get me out of here completely. I mean, maybe some people are, but you're not like just groaning and throwing popcorn everywhere is because Tom Hardy's killing it. So, you know, again, I keep going back to the sequel, the eventual sequel we're going to get, what I'm assuming we're going to get, is that let's get that character. Let's get Tom Hardy doing his thing throughout the whole movie. I mean, it's where the movie ends and where Eddie, you know, turns up and everything or what his situation is. It's just that's the movie I want to see. That's the movie I wanted to see from the very beginning. Oh no.
Yep.
Little girl says,
I don't know I don't know how she got through immigration and all that good stuff. Maybe it didn't pick up on the new sensors that the TSA uses. I'm not sure. But more power to her.
Yeah. She's an alien symbiote, man. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
This
movie is not concerned with an ounce. Yeah. This movie is not concerned with an ounce of realism. So
And that's one thing where it kind of took me out of the movie, where I'm like, why did they could have used anybody else except for this little, like, you know, like preppy looking girl that no way she could be on her own.
Yeah, it's just such a cliche thing of, oh, because possessed kids are creepy. And it's like, well, yes, they are, but it works better when there's a reason for them to be there, and you didn't give an adequate reason for this one to be there and why it couldn't have been literally anybody else. Like, if the symbiote can so easily pass itself off from one person, from one host to the next, why would it be keeping so many hosts for such a sustained period of time? Like, you know, when that little girl gets infected, she would pass it to somebody else, like somebody at TSA who would walk out free. Like, there's so from one person to the next, it'd be so easy to do. And it's obviously more than just a little bit implied that the symbiotes have some form of intelligence. So it just doesn't work. But that's the kind of stuff where I'm almost more willing to give those kinds of things a pass when the movie just says, okay, look, we're just being silly and having a good time with this. Then I'm like, okay, I'm willing to forgive a lot of logic problems. But I think that's where tonally it just, you know, if there was a little bit more of a made up mind here on what this movie was going to be, it would work better. And stuff like that might be a little more forgivable.
Sure. Well, I definitely don't forgive it. I feel like you're right. It's all the visual, but I thought the lady was already in. She looked creepy enough. They just should have kept it her.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, like, you want to, maybe it's easier to not be detected, but it would still just pass it off from one, have more hosts. But I think, for that one, as you said, it's just this preppy little girl, but it's because, she's supposed to be, that's supposed to be creepy.
Right.
But it's very, very hollow.
Oh, man. And this is where I thought for sure the dog was going to bite it.
Oh, yeah.
Or get bit, I should say.
I was like, the last thing this movie needs to do is kill a dog.
Right. Yeah. if you kill a dog in a movie, you better be ready for the ultimate backlash.
I better see a lot of people die for it. That's the only reason John Wick works.
Yeah, exactly.
It's either John Wick style or it's like a classic story like Old Yeller where, you know, you just bring a tissue box, but just arbitrarily killing an animal, especially a dog or a cat, I'm just super not into that.
I agree.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's
just so funny. The dog just looks at Michelle Williams of all people. Like, it's stuff like that where absolutely I agree with you, Sean. It's like, it's convenience. It's so stupid, but it just gets a chuckle out of me. And that stuff I do give a pass because here we have a great scene coming up with between Tom and Riz. And I feel like both of them really bring the energy. And yes, Tom is still doing the heavy lifting. So maybe he's like helping boost up Riz Ahmed's character, but Riz Ahmed's got that ace up his sleeves now because he's hosted with Riot now. I love that look he gives him right there. He knows. Oh, it's so good.
Riz is great, man. Riz is great. Like, again, this, when they're on screen together, they're not terrible, you know, or he elevates his performance when he's with Tom for sure.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, what's this movie with all the men wearing just random rings on their fingers? It's just weird to me.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
It bugs me seeing Tom Hardy's weird finger pointer ring the whole time. It's weird. It's always weirded me out. And I just noted Riz's ring. I'm like, what is this? Are we in like 1970s or something? Like, seriously. Like, you know, wedding rings, whatever. I just, rings are just not my thing.
Well, it is San Francisco. We are kind of a hipster doofus area, so I apologize in advance. I mean,
so Seattle, but Seattle, I mean, like, and maybe Seattle hipsters are.
No, trust me, I've been to Seattle. San Francisco is a lot more hipster doofus.
Fair enough.
Take it from somebody who knows.
Hey, next time you're in Seattle, hit me up, man.
That was like I was in and out. I had to be at work the next day, so I had the whole 15-hour drive back. But definitely will.
Yeah, next time. Oh, there's Riot, who looks this. And again, I'm going to criticize this right now. And I think we all know where I'm going. They should have made him a different color than Venom.
Absolutely.
It's a different enough color. I mean, maybe it was because so it was a different enough color for me. And again, looking at this on 4K, it's got that gray kind of sickly tone to it. It's enough for me. I don't disagree that, hey, let's throw some blue and some, you know, red in there and, coagulate it a bit better. I definitely agree that they could have done more, but it's enough for me where he's got that silver tone, whereas Venom is more like that jet black, that, you know, really hardcore black.
Yeah, I'm with Paul on this one. I think it's, is it a different color? Yes. But once these two start mixing it up, and especially the symbiotes start coming off of their bodies and mixing together, it doesn't hurt this moment right here, this kind of stuff, but it does. I do think it has a negative impact once you have the final battle, and it does make the final battle a little less, it's not so clear and it's not so satisfying. And I know I'm pretty sure Riot is this color, is like that darkish gray, you know, kind of color in the comic books, but so what? It's not like this movie is that worried about being 100% faithful. So I think a different color. I understand. You obviously don't want to go red because your plan is to go with Carnage the next time out, but just do something.
Make him green,
blue, green, whatever. Just something that's going to be much more easily distinguishable from the black.
Yeah, I don't. Oh man, this
here we
this,
go.
This is ridiculous, and this is the stuff I love. I love this. This is amazing.
Oh, like,
so cool. Hi, Eddie.
It, like,
it, I'm it, like I'm creeped out and aroused at the same time. It's just like,
oh my god. I mean. Fair enough.
I mean, like, that's hot. The way it melts off of her, and it's Michelle Williams. I'm like, dang, that's hot.
Well, I mean, Michelle Williams is an attractive female. I'm not gonna lie here. Yeah, that whole thing was so ridiculous, but it's amazing. Like, it's ridiculous.
The theater erupted at that part. The whole theater erupted, and I was looking around. I was like, damn, I think this movie's gonna be a hit. That's where I knew I was like, maybe I'm not the only one who's digging this.
Man, I knew the movie was gonna be a hit once I heard that. Legit Eminem track.
As far as the music goes, that's awful, but I do like the score. I actually do like the score a lot. I have to look up who does it, but I like the main Venom driving theme. That's like I guess because it's repeated throughout the film, so I like that. That's another thing that I actually, I wouldn't say hold this film in high esteem, but just that I appreciate that this film did, is it did come up with a character theme, whereas most films tend not to, or they do, but then the next film had a different score or a different. Yeah.
Well, it was actually Ludwig Göransson who did this.
I know. I was just gonna say,
Academy Award winning Black Creed, Panther right? composer Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah, and then he also did Creed, right?
Yes.
Because he worked with Ryan Coogler. Yeah, so he's amazing. I like his
literally doing everything. He did Mandalorian. He's doing Christopher Nolan's next movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whoa, it's not Hines. Excuse me.
Very cool. Okay.
That's Zimmer, huh? Wow.
And I like how so far he doesn't really, his sounds are not the same. You listen to Black Panther, you listen to this, he's very Black prolific. Panther.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant, and he can do just about anything.
Yeah. His Black Panther score is I know it won an Academy Award and whatever. It's really good. Like it's awesome. And Marvel, he won an Academy Award for Black Panther.
Yep. Yeah. It won best original score. That was one of it won for production design, costume design and score.
Cool. Yeah. So the score, I mean, it's nutty because, Marvel, you know, remember a time, guys, when Marvel Studios was not known for movie scores really, you know, and that was one of the, at least my biggest criticisms of Marvel films. A lot of them, sans the, first Avenger and, Avengers, movies weren't that memorable, but that was,
I think the better, most Marvel scores have been fairly underrated. I do like that double bladed shot with Riot.
That's cool. I will say this, he looks better. This looks a lot better for me. Again, my theater was dark on 4K. I can tell that he's definitely a darker. He's not Venom per se, like you said. But here's a problem. When they both are in the darkness at night, not hard. It's harder to distinguish them still.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When they start mixing it up, like Sean said, in a minute here, it does get confusing. So I won't argue that point.
But what they should have done is had him fight in this room right here where Michelle Williams is running. If they fight in a room that's well lit, then you could tell what's going on a little bit better.
I mean, the setting of this looks pretty cool, so I don't have a problem with the setting. Yeah, and I think it makes sense. I mean, why are they fighting in this room when the whole idea is the rocket? But like, so I'm okay with the location of this. But I think it would have been better if they did a better job distinguishing the design, even the design too, even the facial shape for Riot. Is still a little too Venom-esque. It's obviously different. I'm not trying to say that these are it's the same color and the same design, but too many similarities, not enough differences, and I think it would have made this a little bit easier to track.
Sure, man, absolutely.
Andrew, I gotta give you credit, man, or I'm not giving like you and Venom, I guess I'm the same. Bear with me here. What I'm saying is I really like this stuff. Like this is why I like this movie, and I gave it a more favorable review than I think you, Sean, at this point.
Oh, definitely. easily.
But right. But I'm just,
I'm just being polite. We have a guest in the house. Right. So.
Yeah. And I do appreciate Sean. I did have some talking points if you kind of started to really get into this, but yeah.
But that being said, I love this stuff. And this is why I enjoyed the movie is this, right. And again, I'm in a full disclosure, and Andrew will understand too where I'm coming from, and Sean is it will be very familiar with what I'm about to say. Is this brings me back to being a kid, like this that like seeing Venom on screen fighting the symbiotes, like that is something that I remember going to the comic shop buying these comics, reading these comics and being like, man, like this is this is whatever. It wasn't my favorite comics in the world, but I love comic book characters, and I love Venom, and I love the symbiotes. And it's one of those things where it just seemed this is a dream come true. If I would have walked, even though it doesn't look like Venom without the white spider and everything, I still love this. And the 8-year-old in me is just like losing his mind watching this because I'm like, I can't believe I'm watching Venom, so I don't know, like this actually looks a lot better in 4K than I was anticipating. This is the first time I've watched it. I got on 4K for Christmas for my wife. I requested this, by the way, and I'm like really impressed how good it looks on 4K.
Oh yeah, this is really it's a good looking film for the budget. It really is.
And I will say, seeing it on 4K, I can just differentiate the characters even better than they were on the movie theater. The movie theater was way too dark, and I had a really hard time seeing it on screen. But this, I can tell the differences way, way more on the 4K now.
Yeah.
I will say this. Another movie's kind of wrapping up here. I don't like the movie. I can tell you right now, I don't like the movie any more than I did. I think I think this is ridiculous. Like this is, come on, give me the symbiotes. I don't need them fighting each other.
I'm good with it. I'm actually good with them exchanging some flesh punches here because it gets right back into them.
Yeah, but this is the classic, and Sean, my biggest complaint.
Oh, yeah, this is the classic Paul Herman pet peeve right here.
Yeah, exactly. I love the classic Paul Herman pet peeve. It is. But it's the classic, we got to unmask the hero and show the audience.
Yep.
It's so cliche.
Been a while since we've seen the movie star. Get the movie star back.
Yeah, I know. It's like, no, there's that. It's just so stupid. We don't need it. Again, Endgame is a great example. We didn't have to do that. Like, Steve Rogers didn't need to take his stupid mask off. Iron Man did, to be fair.
Yeah, and then so did Tom Holland. I actually, that's one part in Endgame where I'm like, would Spider-Man really unmask just to say, hey guys, I'm here? I just, that was a little cheap for me. But it was a movie moment, so I rolled with it.
Right, but the Iron Man one made more sense though. Like to me, like I that's forgivable because that's a culmination.
Well, I think when your mask can come on and off in a fraction of a second, I had zero problem with it. And also, these were these heroes kind of showing their faces to one another after everything that had just happened. So that one, I buy it, but yeah, it's I understand.
For the most part, it's tiresome, and I just get so like sick of it. You know, it's like such a trope, and I get it, but it's just like ugh. It's, you know, so that whole scene there where like they're like, fighting each other.
That's why I don't mind that in this movie. By the way, like I don't, as I said, classic Paul Herman pet peeve, not a classic one of my pet peeves. I don't mind the occasional, you know, mask comes off. It is. When it goes back on, it's fine. But yeah, like when it's like every time there's got to be the excuse to get the mask off and it stays off for the rest of the battle, that can get a little bit boring. But but for the most part, if it's on and off, like I don't really have much of an issue with it, because I think ultimately we might be the comic book nerds who care so much about the visual design and everything, and it matters. I'm never going to argue that it doesn't matter, but it's also very important, I think, for us, and maybe even ways that we don't realize, and certainly for general audiences, that they're connecting with the human beings on the screen. And, you know, part of that is seeing their faces, seeing their eyes. So I'm not critical of it. I'm not critical of it as a basic concept and as something that gets used, but it's all in how you use it. It's a tool like anything else. How do you use it?
Right. Well, I think I always think of Spider-Man 1 when they have to like show and even Spider-Man 2. It's like those Spider-Man films are those specifically. I'm just like, ugh, you know.
See, I actually liked it in the first Spider-Man film when he was fighting Green Goblin and his mask was starting to shred up a bit. But I thought when they repeated that in the second one, that is where I more fall into line with your pet peeve. Where it's like, okay, do we have to do that every time? Can we just have him just keep the mask? Especially by the time we got to Spider-Man 3, I was just like, oh, come on. And then he didn't even have it on, I think, the entire fight.
Yeah.
Once Venom pulled the mask off of Peter to, like, emasculate him or whatever he was trying to do, I mean, or play alpha male, but it's just like it didn't go back on his head again. I just thought, okay, and you got camera crews all over the place and just,
In all fairness to those movies, the eyes didn't move. So like it's such an easier thing now for the MCU version of Spider-Man with that design, with the lenses on the eyes and the way that moves, and it allows you to, you know, convey emotion. It was really hard to convey emotion in that Spider-Man suit. So I understand wanting to show Tobey Maguire's mug during the final fight. I know it doesn't make sense as a comic book fan, and I know even from a plot story perspective, as you said, the idea of him trying to protect his secret identity and he should care about that. All of that's completely valid, but I also understand, you know, why Sam Raimi was making different choices in that particular film or in those films.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you can be a lot more expressive between the MCU's camera lens, zoom in and zoom out, or with how they did Deadpool, and certainly with Venom here. I mean, just I think the more expressive you can get with the mask now, I think it's really good. That's going to kind of have me curious on how they do somebody like Wolverine when they bring him against you. Here we go.
Random. So random.
R.I.P. my man.
Yes.
I know.
I was actually...
I actually like that cameo.
I can't remember if I knew ahead of time whether or not Stan had a cameo in this one. I remember being, or I think I had forgotten about it by the time I sat down to watch this movie, if I had any prior knowledge that he made it for that one. Because, I mean, obviously he was still alive when this movie came out, but I don't know if I expected it, because he wasn't in Deadpool 2. So I wasn't sure if he had actually made it out for this one, but I'm glad he did. I'm always happy to see a Stan cameo, especially now. I mean, this goes down as I guess it's, you know, there were how many after this? Spider-Verse, Captain Marvel, and then Endgame. So this is definitely one of the last ones.
Yeah.
Spider-Verse, I literally tear up every time that one comes on. Because it's like the emotional impact, what's going on in the music, and then like, and then, you know, and Stan Lee. It's like, I'm always like.
Even his even his dialogue in that. Like it's
no, that's what I'm saying. His dialogue is amazing.
You couldn't have picked a better cameo to be the first one to pop up on screen after he passed. You really couldn't.
Yeah.
And it should have been in a Spider-Man movie. I mean, completely appropriate.
Yep.
No, that was rough. That was I definitely teared up.
Oh yeah. During that. No, I lost that. I lost it on that one for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same.
I was a little surprised this was in the end of the movie.
I was not. This seems like when it didn't happen earlier or midway through the film, I knew they were going to close on this, and I thought, okay, that's perfect. That works.
Yeah. It makes sense because it has nothing to do with the plot. So if it wasn't going to happen midway through, you got to have it happen at the end.
Yep. And I love this whole exchange. I love the turd in the wind line. As soon as I first heard it, I was just like, oh, I think this film's going to be for me. But then when I heard all the reviews, that's what brought my expectations down. So I'm glad this movie ended up being more of my instinctive expectations when I first saw the trailer. For me, anyways. Mrs. Chen, I love her reaction. Of course, it's PG-13, so we don't know how much of a mess she has to clean up.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like much. There's not an ounce of blood around.
And now we have the greatest song in the history of superhero soundtracks.
Well, I will say, luckily, at least there's enough dialogue between Eddie and Venom here to kind of just get us to the end credits. Yeah. And then I can quickly bounce before Eminem really starts popping off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Oh man! So when is it directly at the end of the movie? I think it's mid, right?
It's mid
credits.
Yeah, it's after all these above the line titles.
By the way, guys, I've had to pee this whole time and I haven't left once. By the way, I just want you guys to know that.
So Matthew Libatique, who did he's DP on this one. He also did Wonder Woman and he did the first Iron Man film. He might have done the second one too.
Oh, Tom Hardy was an executive producer. Huh. I didn't know that.
Good for him then. That means he made out like a son of a gun with the money back.
Yeah. Yeah, if he had back end on this,
that's what being an executive producer is all about. You're pretty much rolling the dice. Or making a calculated investment. Yeah. Depending. Well, I think this was more of a roll of the dice.
He must have a say. That must why Ruben Fleischer had to like kind of go with what he wanted to do then, because he's an executive producer, I would assume, correct? Or am I? And I don't know the business as well. So.
Executive producer is
it's actually less than a producer, even, right? I mean,
technically, yeah. Technically, so yeah, it's right. But it's executive producer is a varied title. It means a lot of different things. Right. Executive producer, sometimes an EP credit can be almost purely contractual with little to no money. But in Tom Hardy's case, I'm sure there's money involved in it because this is a smaller property, you know, compared to other stuff he could have done. So for him, I'm sure he had the pull that if he was going to, you know, do this, that he wanted an EP credit and another way to make money. That's also another way to, for an actor, it's another way to add on to their salary.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. So it's like they give him the base salary and also the EP credit.
Even if they're not getting any points on the movie, they could still end up getting, you know, collecting a fee as an actor and a fee as a producer.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So they probably paid just like going actor rates for Tom Hardy, and he agreed to it because he was interested in the script and interested in what he could bring into the role. Again, I'm assuming, but I'm sure he more than made money back on the EP credit.
It's like a $90-100 million movie, so he's not working for scale on this. I mean, I'm sure he got a nice acting fee, but yeah, you know, if you want to add on to that, you can get a little EP for EP credit and back end or just another producer fee.
Then the incentive for him to do a sequel is even higher than at that point.
Could be. Absolutely. I mean, you never know. It depends on what was in the contract, because sometimes the compensation for the sequel can already be locked in, regardless of how well the first movie does. If Tom Hardy's agent had the foresight, he would have he would have covered it.
Still, even if he's getting 1.5% out of $855 million, that's still a chunk of change.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, it might be, but that's where it might just be a percentage of the profit, and the profit's nowhere near $855 million.
Right. It's true.
Because you have production, you have marketing, and then and that's the downside is when you're, you know, it's nice when a movie makes a bunch of money in China, but the studio doesn't actually get most of that back. They usually get about 25% of that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah,
it's more of a 50-50 domestic, but international, you have less favorable splits, and China's one of the worst. So, China's a big, like, sexy number to put on there for your box office totals, but it doesn't, as far as the money you're actually making, it's not that great.
Ah, got it.
That wig is so bad. That wig is so bad.
Yeah, I watched this movie with a buddy of mine, Mark Hughes. We went and saw it in IMAX, and he just immediately called it Raggedy Ann, and I just started dying laughing in the theater. not Raggedy Ann, Little Orphan Annie.
And I remember you telling that story before, Sean. Yeah. So I will say this. The wig, when I saw it, I was like, what the heck? And then I'm looking at the wig, and then I realize that I'm also looking at Woody Harrelson, and then I'm like, okay, at least it's that wig on Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
And not just some rando or whatever.
Yeah. Well, Sean, what'd you think of Venom the second time?
I'm actually curious if it even bumped up half a notch even.
No, not really. I mean, I have the same I have the same things that I appreciate about it and the same things that I don't appreciate about it. You know, I believe I said it during the spoiler review, but maybe not. I mean, I said the only way I would watch this movie again is if we were going to do a commentary for it, and now that's happened. So this may go down as the last. I don't want to guarantee that this will be the last time I ever watch the movie. Who knows? But yeah, I don't have any plans to, you know, to rewatch this for a little bit. But you know what? If we're going to get a sequel, then maybe I'll do a rewatch ahead of the sequel. That's usually a fairly common thing that most of us do. So that might be worth another look. But I am interested to see what the hell happens with this. And it still kind of weirds me out just how quiet Sony has been, you know, because they really don't have to. I understand that Sony thought the movie was bad because everything they did in the lead up to the movie is the typical playbook that studios go by in terms of how they roll out a movie that they don't particularly believe in. But it made a crap ton of money, and as I was saying, it's even though the China number is not the actual money you get from that isn't reflective of how impressive it looks on paper. The domestic number being over 200 million is really significant, and that's more than enough reason for Sony to be touting the success of this and really being much more aggressive in terms of marketing and making announcements for a sequel, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. And so it's very strange, and I don't fully understand it. I understand that they didn't necessarily believe in this movie and were a little taken aback and surprised by its success, but I feel like you should still acknowledge that success and be happy about it, and then just realize, okay, well, even if we feel like we got away with one here, great, we got away with it. We have the opportunity to make another one. We make it better, so let's just go ahead and get the positivity train rolling for the next movie. And we still just have this very strange radio silence.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I just kind of thought it was already officially announced, but what you're telling me, I think that's very. Not alarming, but it's very curious what's going on, considering with Far From Home and the whole multiverse thing going on, that the rumors are flying rampant about that. There's a lot, you know. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt, but I mean, I would say that speaking of your buddy Mark Hughes, Sean, he actually wrote an article a couple days ago, and addressing how Venom could potentially come into a third MCU Spider-Man film, this version of Venom, because of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just thought I'd say that because, you know, pretty much that would be interesting to see that we can get maybe a Venom 2 Maximum Carnage or whatever they want to call it. They just want to call it Venom 2 and it has Carnage in it. But then we also see Venom coming into Peter Parker's world in the MCU. Would be pretty interesting how they handle that, but I'm sure Kevin Feige's not at all interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, the only way I could see it happening is if Sony made it a condition of the deal, because most people forget. Everybody just thinks this sharing deal is an ongoing thing, but it's been little chunks at a time, and maybe there's already an extension that goes beyond Far From Home, but none of that's been confirmed for us, and so it's really hard to say what the case is, but. If there was no previously agreed upon extension that just wasn't announced, and then Sony came in and said, well, look, if you want to keep sharing Spider-Man, or the condition of that for us is that we need Venom, Tom Hardy's Venom, in that next Spider-Man solo film, I don't know if that's the point where Kevin Feige says, well, thanks, but no thanks, and walks away, or if he would, you know, I have a hard time believing that Disney and Marvel Studios would respond to that kind of ultimatum. And so it comes down to whether or not things are going to continue on between Sony and Marvel Studios. And if they are, then I still have serious doubts that that Tom Hardy's Venom would appear in the third Marvel Studios Spider-Man solo film. I have no doubt in my mind that that's something Sony would be very interested in. But
sure.
Whether or not, but I don't think it's something Marvel would be interested in. And I still think Sony, even though they've made some bonehead moves in the past, I'd be shocked if they were to be so short-sighted as to make it a condition that ends up breaking the deal to try and force Venom into that movie. I mean, last time they tried to force Venom into a third Spider-Man movie, it didn't work out so well. So I would hope they would learn from that.
Yep, I would hope so too. So we'll definitely see. I mean, mainly what I'm looking to have happen is I'm curious on what Jared Leto, or Leto, however you pronounce his last name, on how he takes care of Morbius, and then that'll be interesting. And then I'm definitely interested in Venom too, if they can supposedly swing that officially. I'm looking at it right now. It says 2020, but
yeah,
kind of scratching my head on that one.
I mean, these don't have the same budgets and the same production timetables as, you know, larger comic book movies. So, I mean, they can still, in the movie, I mean, I think Sony has basically an untitled Marvel release date for October of next year. So, they have Morbius in July that they've confirmed the date on, and then they have another one in October, and that's presumed to be Venom 2. Of course, they can just drop it from the schedule if they're not going to have Venom ready, but if it's an October 2020 release, then they still have plenty of time to start production. And just because we're not hearing about it doesn't mean that things aren't happening. You know, it probably means they're not casting yet, because usually once they start casting, that information gets out, because even if the studios don't release that information, agencies and everybody else starts reporting it to trades and all that stuff. So it's just like with Marvel Studios, you know, next couple of movies. I mean, all that stuff's still coming out, even though Marvel's not announcing anything, and that's because they're in the casting phases of it. So we might hear some stuff pretty soon, but It is a little strange to not just go ahead and announce this. But part of the reason I'm wondering if they haven't been announcing things is, you know, we talk about negotiations and things happening behind the scenes. If this has been a period of back and forth between Sony and Disney / Marvel Studios, maybe that has something to do with it as well. But I also think, you know, there's a part of me that feels like Sony is learning lessons here, and they're actually being patient in the wake of the success of this film. I would love to see more confidence for this specific franchise, but before Sony goes too crazy and in fully committing to a lot of SUMC stuff, and especially the kind of what they're going to require from Marvel Studios in exchange for continuing this relationship, I think it's very wise for Sony to actually wait and see what happens with Morbius before they get too crazy about it. Because even if Morbius comes out and it's nowhere near the hit the Venom was, or it's not even a hit, then Sony doesn't have a universe. What they've got is one hit franchise. That's it. They don't know that they have, they really don't know that they have the makings of a universe yet. They hope they do, but they can't possibly know that just because one movie was a hit.
Yeah, that's a good point. With Morbius, I almost feel like they're playing with house money a little bit, because you can make a pretty inexpensive vampire movie, put Marvel on the cover, or on, you know, all over it as a Marvel property, and kind of see what happens. And if it's not, then you just kind of move on or whatever. But, you know, with Morbius, it's very interesting. I'm excited because he's such a low key, or, you know, kind of a C-list hero, anti-hero, if you will, of Marvel. I like the character, don't get me wrong, but he's never been able to support his own series, and obviously it doesn't really mean anything in the franchise movie world, because Ant-Man couldn't support his own comic either, and he's a pretty, you know, pretty good, decent hit for Marvel. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where you just don't know what's going to happen, and I just, you know, Jared Leto, it's really going to be up to him to sell that performance. Just like with Tom Hardy with Venom, like, it really is. Like, I think with not all these characters depend on the actor, in my opinion. Spider-Man, I mean, they all do to an extent, but, like, the marketability of the character itself helps a lot of times, even if it's not the best performances or whatever. But in the case of Venom and Morbius, to me, it's 100% up to the actor. Like, it's got to be the actor that drives it 100%. And no, maybe I'm not making sense.
But... No, I mean, I think it's a combination. I mean, right. It's obviously not just the actor that sells these things, because most of these actors, even the MCU ones, you start looking at their box office outside of the MCU and it's not great, and it's certainly not consistent. So we don't really live in the era anymore where people commonly show up just for the sake of the movie star who's on the poster. It's the right actor in the right role. And just if that can connect with audiences, and when it's something brand new like Morbius, you have to do a lot of legwork in your trailers to convince the audience that there's going to be some sort of connection there. And when it works, it's great. When it doesn't work, it's not great. I mean, that's, you know, even for somebody who's hypercritical of this movie, you know, what's the one thing I praise the most about it? It's Tom Hardy in the lead. And I think that's right. What audiences care about. So if they're looking at who's in the lead and how that's playing out and they're enjoying that, then that's usually enough, or it's a great starting point, and it goes a long way with an audience. And I think there is some success in that for Venom with this first film. But for what Sony has to do with Morbius is they've got to convince audiences that it's going to be the same thing. Now, I do think Venom obviously is a more popular character just in general than Morbius. So there's definitely some more mainstream attention. Venom's much more of a mainstream icon than Morbius is not an icon, period. So there is some of that, but I still think Sony can make a hit out of Morbius, but it's certainly going to be more contingent on the movie being truly good and being something that, it's going to, word of mouth is probably going to depend, and critical response is probably going to depend more for Morbius than it would have for Venom. Because some people there's a curiosity with Venom that I think people have always had, and a fascination that a lot of people have always had that just doesn't exist for Morbius. And so it'll be, it's going to be a unique challenge, but that's why I say it's so important. You can't, just because Venom was a hit, it doesn't mean that Morbius is also going to be a hit. It's going to be tough. But the benefit here is, I mean, as they did with Venom, they kept the budget down. You know, even if this movie didn't make $800 million, if this movie had made $500 or $600 million, it still would have been okay. It would have been just fine. Mm-hmm. And for Morbius, I don't know what the budget's going to be for that, but I would say it's probably not going to be as big. It shouldn't be as big as Venom's budget, because the potential, I don't think, is as great as Venom. So if it has an even smaller budget than Venom, so we're still talking probably well under $100 million, it doesn't have to blow up and make $800 million. It could make $400 or $500 million and still be a very profitable movie. I mean, I think that's something that's pretty underrated, but it's starting to come around in the genre, thanks in large part to Deadpool. That first Deadpool movie at $58 million making $700 million, people realize, oh, we don't necessarily need to have billion-dollar superhero movies all the time if we have more reasonable budgets. Not every superhero movie, in fact, many, many, many superhero movies, they don't need $150 to $200 million every time you're going to make one of the movies. And you shouldn't do that, especially if you're going to be doing newer stuff. I mean, you brought up Ant-Man. It's the cheapest Marvel movie. The first Ant-Man was $130 million, which still much more than Venom, obviously, but it's very low by Marvel standards.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Quite frankly, I'm waiting on them to do a Batman movie around $100 million.
They'd make a lot more money. I mean, they'd make the same. It's a great point. They'd make the same money as they would on a $200 million Batman movie.
I'm almost curious, because I'm actually really super excited for the Robert Pattinson casting, to kind of go on a DC tangent here. But I'm curious to see how Matt Reeves is going to tackle this, because he does want it to be a noir detective thriller, so that's going to be interesting. Unless they're doing Clayface or something, I don't see any reason why they can't manage the budget properly and just bring it in under a certain target and have it just blow up bigger than anything, even.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't spend the money just for the sake of spending the money.
It's almost like a badge of honor, like, oh, our Batman cost $200 million. Well, ours cost $220 million. And it's just like, how about just relax, guys, and just, how about be studio friendly and keep those executives happy by lining their pockets by just putting in a movie and
absolutely. That's
it, you know? All you got to do is, obviously filmmaking's a lot more intricate, but it's more than action and cut. But hopefully you understand where I'm coming from.
No,
this movie... And I think with Morbius, I think if they just play Morbius the way they almost played like Blade, just maybe a bit more Well, however they're going to do Morbius in terms of the tone, but it's like they, it wasn't Sony, I don't think, that did Blade, but you know, that was out of nowhere, and that was Marvel.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to like 90% of the population.
Right. Yeah. Morbius is going to be very, very interesting thing to, very interesting film to watch, but that's happening. Sure. They've already been making it. So
yeah.
So that one's for sure. And we'll have to wait and see if we get any more details on the next version of Venom, but I think these are, at least I might be a little bit ahead of you guys, but I think I'm all wrapped up here on my end.
Oh, I'm super wrapped up.
Okay.
I even went through the
Spider-Verse thing. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Same here.
Well, thank you all to everyone who listened to this commentary. Really appreciate you sticking it out, whether you enjoy Venom or not. Hopefully, whichever side you fall on, you were able to enjoy this episode. I'm guessing if you didn't like Venom, there's a chance you might have skipped this. But
sorry, everybody.
No, not at all. No, and actually, I'm actually pretty sure everybody's going to listen to it. So just like everyone will eventually listen to a Fanforstic commentary from Paul and I. But I want to thank you, Andrew, obviously for your support on our Patreon, but also for coming on the show. You did a fantastic job, and it was a pleasure having you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. You guys are awesome, and I think I speak for all patrons where I say, like, you guys are like a bright light out there in the nerd community, whatever you want to call it. I know Paul doesn't like the F word.
it's true though, man. Like your support, everyone's support on Patreon and listening, everything, it's huge for us. It really does. It helps all our lives way more than you guys realize. Things are stressful out there. Yeah. You know, you guys make life a lot easier to go see things like Dark Phoenix and things like that. to talk about them, you know, honestly.
I figure my contribution for the year is at least worth you having to suffer through Dark Phoenix. I'm still hemming and hawing if I want to see that movie.
And you know what? And it's funny because and that's why I'm playing it up on Twitter. I'm letting people know, like, hey, because honestly, I was on the fence for Apocalypse, and we were gonna see that movie anyway because obviously for the show. But when we, if it wasn't for the show, my brother and I, we were both like, because we just did not look good. After Apocalypse, we were both like, we're done with the X-Men saga, essentially. And this movie just feels like, if it really wasn't for the show, I would probably not, I'd skip it. I hate to say it, but I probably would, just because I'm, you know, money stuff and things like that. So, you know, like I said, Patreon is huge right now for me.
Yeah, no, for sure, and I'll just say that, you know, with Apocalypse, I walked out on that. That was just dumb.
You walked out?
Yeah. Yep. Walked out. I walked out midway through the third act. I was just like, this is really. It's actually a film. See, here's the thing: of films, especially comic book films, they can either do one of three things, and they can either be really amazing, they can just bore me, or they can just make me actually. Physically or emotionally or whatever, actually tangibly upset. Apocalypse made me upset. I was just like, why did they do this? Like, I don't want to get into that. That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, podcast altogether.
Yeah. But, and that's a commentary that I will never request. Let's just put it that way. But at least for Dark Phoenix, I mean, I at least want to see these young incarnation X-Men. Yeah. I want to see Ty Sheridan. I want to see if he, you know, I want to see his Scott Summers. I want to see more of, I forget the actress name, but I want to see more of her as Storm. James McAvoy, I want to see him finally through a whole entire film with his bald head, like just finally. I'm looking forward to just seeing what this is, although I know what I'm getting myself into, because I've listened to your spoiler free review, Sean, and I'm pretty sure that I'll be shocked if this ends up being like Venom for me.
Yeah. You know, we will see.
And you never know. Maybe you'll find yourself requesting that Dark Phoenix commentary, even though you'll never request an Apocalypse. You never know how it's going to turn out. But for everybody following along, Andrew, let them know where they can find you.
Oh, I'm on Twitter. I'm at A Custer X, so ACUSTERX. If you want to I don't know, if you're into K-pop and Legos and comic books.
He's not.
Hey, a lot of people promises. Are.
Yeah, those
all sorts of stuff. If you like getting interrupted at work, you can follow me there. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at acustorx, and then just the number one right after it. So again, I'm everything's on display: cats, K-pop, comic books, everything. So
I've followed Andrew for years now on Twitter, and I can promise you, he's not lying about all those things. But Andrew's awesome. I will 100% vouch for him. And I'm, like I said, his support, he's supported us for a long time, and his continued support in through the Patreon is just the icing on the cake. Honestly, Andrew, thank you so much for everything. I consider you a friend online. So,
yeah, same.
Awesome. Yeah. And so just know that, like, I mean that, we've talked many times about things. So you're in, I always respect your opinion. You convinced me to see Oblivion, backfired on my face a little bit, but we still enjoyed it. And I remember you felt bad about it. But I was like, no, it's cool, man, it's cool. So, but yeah, you're awesome, and thank you so much for all your support. And I look forward to doing this again soon.
Oh, we are going to be doing it again soon, because Andrew's already got himself another commentary set. We just got to wait for Avengers Endgame to come out on Blu-ray. So Andrew will be back for our Avengers Endgame commentary, which is an opportunity for me to announce that there's going to be an Avengers Endgame commentary pretty close to when that movie actually hits theaters. But Paul, well, actually, first, Andrew, thank you once again for everything that you do and your support of the show, not just on the Patreon, but I know you've been kind enough to listen to Paul and I throughout the many iterations of podcasts that we've done for a long time. And so I definitely appreciate you you sticking around and not getting tired of us. So
yes, thank you.
Never, very much appreciate never. That. Paul, where can everybody find you?
Find me on Twitter at Herman22 with two N's, a.k.a. P-Thug.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Sean Gerber. You can find all of the different information we have for exclusives on Patreon, patreon.com/Marvel Studios News. There's the website, marvelstudiosnews.com, Facebook and Instagram at Marvel Studios News, and on Twitter at Marvel Newscast. So for Andrew and Paul, I'm Sean. Thanks for listening. Venom, Venom. We'll see you next time.
Venom.